live animals, fowl, fish, even insects, are muktzah. The category of muktzah in which they fall is known as what we've been discussing, muktzah machmas gufo, meaning they are inherently not something that we use for what we would call functional purposes. It's not something that you drink with, eat with, wash with. It's not something you walk with, sit on, lift with. It's just something that gives us milk, perhaps, meat, perhaps, or fun, delight, because we watch it and it's a plaything, but that's not considered a function. It's not a keli. And therefore, they are just inherently muktzah as they are, which means that people who have to move their animals about for the sake of the safety of the animal will always try to use indirect methods wherever possible. So that if, for example, an animal needs to be walked for its comfort's sake, we would try to have someone who's non-Jewish walk the animal, or have the animal so trained that it literally walks by itself. That is, you come with the animal to the door, and the animal walks out with you, and the animal takes care of its needs by itself without you lifting up the animal. Even in the case of an animal that's in pain, we try to avoid lifting the animal up and picking it up because it's muktzah. And in all instances, to play with the animal or the bird has to be avoided because the animal is muktzah. Now, you're allowed to release a bird from a cage, but you wouldn't be allowed to put it back into its cage because of tzad, because that's considered trapping the animal or trapping the bird. But in all instances, you wouldn't be allowed to stretch out your finger or arm and then have the bird land on your hand and then move it, because that would be tiltul muktzah. So people who have pets like birds should certainly keep it in the cage, should not move the bird, and shouldn't move the cage, because since the cage contains a bird that's muktzah, that bird having been in the cage at Beinish Mashos means that it was dedicated as a place for the muktzah bird. The entire cage is a basis ledavar ha'asur, and the cage cannot be moved. Even if it's in the way, you can't pick it up and say, I need it to use it for something else, or it's in the way, I need to push it out of the way. Now, if it's an empty cage, Beinish Mashos, then it's a keli that's not been used as a basis because Beinish Mashos it was empty. That keli, that cage can be moved on Shabbos. But your typical kitty basket, if the cat was in it, Beinish Mashos, a fishbowl, small little innocent fishbowl, may not be moved because since the fish are muktzah, the whole bowl is muktzah as well. Again, that's because the fish were there in the bowl, Beinish Mashos. So obviously a large tank isn't something you're going to move around so easily, but you might think that a small innocent fishbowl could be just picked up and moved around, and that's not the case. It's muktzah. Now, there are times when you might have to move an animal, as we said, for the sake of the animal's safety, or to alleviate the animal's tzar. Tzar balechaim is an important mitzvah to abide, and it's your animal, you have to make sure that it's not experiencing any undue pain. And therefore, it is at times permissible for us not to pick up the animal, but to push it by hand. And as we push it, the animal moves of its own volition. That by pushing it, as opposed to lifting it, we get it to go wherever we need it, either out the door, or in the case of bringing it to safety, perhaps pushing it into safety, into the house. You're allowed similarly to use your leg, your foot, to move the animal, and that's to be midadeid, to move it by pushing it or having your hand on it such that with your hand on it, it automatically moves. But the reason that you can do that is only because the animal needs that for its safety or comfort. And to use your hand on the animal directly, such that because of your hand the animal moves, that's something you're allowed to do only where there is an Erev. The concern is that if you're going to put your hand on the animal to make it move for its safety, you might forget and pick it up accidentally. Because it's by hand, not with a leash, but by hand directly, we're concerned you're going to move it by picking it up. If it doesn't move properly and quickly with your hand on its back, you might just go underneath and lift it up by accident. So because of that, this is only to be done in a Rishus HaYachid, but not in a Rishus HaRabim. If, on the other hand, the animal is on a leash and it moves around by itself, so then with a very short leash, one that is so short that you and the animal are close to each other and there's nothing that hangs out of your hand that looks like you're carrying, and there's no part of the leash that's going to come down all the way toward the ground, where again it looks like the leash is being carried as opposed to something that's just ancillary to the animal. So if it's a short leash, then you'd be allowed to take the animal out, even if there's no Erev, because the animal moves by itself, and the leash is attached to the animal, and you're certainly not considered to be carrying, because you're maintaining this leash that's around the animal's neck. The animal is moving the leash, and the animal is moving that leash for its safety's sake, because without that leash, the animal is going to be lost, and then the animal could conceivably perish. Now, the case that is most extreme, where you're dealing with an animal that is in danger, mortal danger, is really not subject to any exception unless the animal is pricey, if it's an expensive animal, and what's involved is hefsid meruba. The classic case was a farmer whose prize cow, maybe his only source of milk and cheese, ends up in a stream, and it's a stream that suddenly flooded on Shabbos because of massive rains, and now the animal can't get up out of the water, and it's being threatened with drowning. Now, you know, this is something that doesn't apply to us readily. We don't really have this kind of situation, but these things happen, and they happen all the time. In rural areas where people maintain farms and have livestock, and they have streams running through their property, and the animals, you know, wander about, and suddenly there's this terrible rain. This is something that's very real and that people have to contend with. If an animal is stuck where it might drown, for example, so then the halacha says that we should get a Gentile to save the animal's life. If at all possible, use a Gentile who will directly lift the animal out. Maybe you'll need a few of these very strong fellas to pick the animal up and pull it out of the muck or out of the mud or out of, you know, whatever sort of problem it's in, out of the water or stream, pull it out. If you can't find someone to do that, so then what we are allowed to do is prop the animal up enough that it should be able to breathe and be free of the water at least till after Shabbos. In other words, take blankets and pillows and push them underneath the front of the animal to lift the animal up so it's able to stay out of the water long enough so it can breathe and live.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What do you do, and this has happened to me, you're sitting minding your own business in your daughter's house and her cat jumps on your lap?
Well, you can certainly, you know, push on it. Uh-huh. You can't pick the cat up. Uh-huh. The question is, what happens if somebody's pet jumps on you? And jumps on your lap, for example. And you want to remove it. You're not comfortable that way. So, since it's not causing you any harm and it's not dangerous to you, it's just uncomfortable, you really shouldn't pick it up by hand and remove it. But rather, wait for it to go down by itself. Or, if it won't, you may push it. And then by pushing it, or putting your hand on it, it's going to move by itself. Remember that mukta always means moving something, lifting and moving, as opposed to touching. So the fact that you put your hand on it and then the cat automatically starts to move away from you means that you've done nothing wrong, because the touching that causes it to move is not prohibited. You haven't lifted it. But the mukta aspect of pets needs to be reinforced. People may not even realize that these common household pets are mukta. That doesn't mean you can't pet them, but you can't lift them. Yeah?
The situation where an animal gets hurt did happen. We had a dachshund in Muncie, and Freyla was her name. Freyla was a beautiful, valuable, light brown dachshund. And she followed my daughter to shul, Rabbi Tenma. And we didn't know she was out of the house, and she found my daughter, and a car hit her in front of Rabbi Tenma's shul. And it did become an issue.
So if you have a very expensive pet, not one that's so dear but really expensive, or an animal that's expensive and it really constitutes a hefsed meruba, then where there's no other solution and no Gentile and no other way to save the animal, meaning to save yourself from loss, there you'd be allowed to pick the pet up by hand. Otherwise, without hefsed meruba, the fact that it's tzar ba'al chayim is not set aside, even though the animal is in tzar, but with makom that there's tzar ba'al chayim and there's hefsed, loss, significant loss, then we would allow b'diavad to remove the animal, even lifting it by hand.
What you're saying to me is very hurtful, because it's not a question for the person who loses their animal. It's not a question of money. It's a question of the love.
100%.
There's a
very great difference between the sense of compassion that we have for a living creature versus truly putting value that halachically recognizes transgressions of Shabbos being set aside. There marks the difference. All of Tzar Ba'alei Chayim notwithstanding, we still do not violate the Shabbos unless there is a hefsed meruba. It could be that in the case of someone who needs this, in other words, if there's an emotional need of a young person, certainly people who have pets for therapy, you could argue then that also is perhaps hefsed meruba. There are increasingly forms of therapy that include living things that are functioning in a person's rehabilitation. A seeing eye dog obviously would be in a different category as well. Insects are mukta. They are annoying, and they are mukta. And one certainly is not going to want to pick them up. So that's not so much what we have to talk about, but we have to talk about swatting them, killing them, trapping them. And the answer in most instances is no. Don't trap them, don't kill them, don't swat them, don't step on them, just ignore them. And in most instances, if you ignore them, they'll ignore you. However, there are those times when an insect is dangerous. And there are people for whom certain insects are dangerous. Somebody who has had a bee bite and had terrible reactions in the past knows good and well that for them to sustain a bee bite is going to mean severe pain, or worse. Even if it's not something, chas v'sholom, that's dangerous, it's just going to be very painful. One is allowed to trap a bee to avoid that pain. You're not trapping it because you want the bee. Remember, it's something that's being done without intention to use what you're accomplishing. You're not using the bee. You're trying to avoid the bee being free, but you're not hoping to use the bee in any constructive way. And that's why if someone is going to be, chas v'shalom, hurt significantly, then trapping the bee would be all right. The best thing to do, of course, if it's possible, if you have someone who's not Jewish who is present, ask that person to help with this problem. That's much better, because it's not a Jewish person who's trapping, not a Jewish person who is removing or killing the bee. If you have no one and the bee is going to hurt, that's something that you'd be then allowed to do, because you want to avoid the pain, and you're allowed to in the case of severe pain. We're not talking about an annoying kind of situation. We're talking about severe pain. Today, here on Long Island, for example, with mosquitoes that might have some serious diseases, as in the West Nile virus, one should be careful to either trap the mosquito, or if there's no other solution, kill the mosquito, because they could be carrying disease. This would be very similar to what used to be the halacha of a mosquito that could be carrying malaria. Nobody would tell you that you're not allowed to kill a mosquito that might be carrying malaria, which is a deadly disease. And similarly today, with West Nile virus being so prevalent, you certainly can swat the mosquito. Is it better to try to trap it? Yes. If you can trap that mosquito without killing it, that would be better. Just try to get a cup over it and then leave it there. But if that's not possible, the reason why you would be allowed to is because of the very dangerous kinds of virus that the mosquito might be carrying.
I heard in a...
The insecticides that are used to kill insects, because you normally can't use them on Shabbos, they're all muktzah. The actual packages and cans of insecticides and such sprays that kill these insects are muktzah. Mouse traps are muktzah. Whether you've set them out or whether they're still in their package, these things are muktzah. They're not able to be used on Shabbos. Rodent killer is muktzah. You wouldn't be allowed to put it out. And if you put something out before Shabbos, you shouldn't move it on Shabbos. These things are all inherently muktzah because you can't use them on Shabbos. However, a spray that's used to clear an environment, in other words, it's not used to kill but to repel, insect repellent, to keep them off and away, so that's something you're allowed to do, and therefore the spray itself is not muktzah. If it's in a form in which you may not be able to spread it on your body, such as a bomb, a stick that you rub onto your body, and you can't use that because of the problem of mimareach, so then obviously that's muktzah. But a spray from a can or a bottle is something you'd be allowed to spray into the air to keep it free and clear of insects, or onto your clothing or onto your skin. So that's something that you can do. You can spray and put that spray on yourself or on your clothing on Shabbos, and obviously, therefore, the spray itself is not muktzah. And in the case, for example, of a sukkah, people sometimes have bee traps. Those are muktzah, and while you're allowed to set that up before Yom Tov, they're muktzah and they cannot be moved in any way on Yom Tov. On Chol HaMoed, they'd be able to be moved, but on Yom Tov, they would be muktzah. And again, in the sukkah, you might be interested in spraying before the people and food come into the sukkah. You can spray the environment, you can spray the sukkah with an insect repellent before the meal. That also is not a problem. If during the meal the bees are prohibiting a process of eating, and you're worried that not only is your meal being disturbed, but if someone gets bitten, they're going to be in great pain, so then if there's no other solution, you can trap a bee to make sure that the person who's so sensitive to a bee sting won't end up with a sting that's so painful. But normally a bee sting is not so dangerous and not so painful, and we should try to avoid trapping the bees. Usually, if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone. That's always a good lesson in life. It works not only with insects, but sometimes it works even with bigger, more important annoyances. And if you leave them alone, they'll leave you alone as well.